Hi, everybody, and welcome to the FNS Wrestling Podcast. I am your host, back for another solo mission to talk about a little more ROH this week. Normally, you'll find me with my teenage son, Jackson, on our flagship show on Saturdays, talking about AEW Dynamite, NXT, Impact Wrestling, and sometimes ROH if I don't cover it earlier in the week. He will not be joining me as he is not watching ROH until they get some fans in the stands. So it'll just be me going over an episode that, not to ruin anything, but I did enjoy quite a bit more than the last few weeks. So I'm sort of excited to talk about some ROH coming up here. But first, if you're a new listener, welcome. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. If you'd like to contact myself or my son at any point, you can reach me at fnswrestling@gmail.com. That'll come to me. My son runs our Instagram, which is fns_wrestling_podcast on Instagram. As well as you can obviously comment in YouTube if that's where you happen to be listening to the show. I always will reply, and it's lovely to hear from anyone. So if you have any sort of feedback, positive or otherwise, we'd love to hear it. So thank you very much for tuning in. But at this point, I think we should get started and look at some ROH from this week of television. So let's do that now. So Quinn welcomes us to the show, as she always does, and immediately tells us about the two matches that are upcoming on tonight's show. In the main event, we're going to get LFI finally back to take on Violence Unlimited, which is the name given to Brody King's new faction that we haven't heard from since the pay-per-view, the 19th anniversary show, which has been one of my criticisms because this new faction was introduced at that pay-per-view and then hasn't been seen since. It's been, I think, 3 weeks now, so they're showing up on the show, which is great. So they're going to be in a six-man tag match against LFI, and we also get a quick recap of the Violence Unlimited making their sort of debut at the 19th anniversary pay-per-view. But first, before we get to that, we're going to get Dak Draper coming off the biggest win of his career. He's going to be taking on Eli Isom, who is undefeated since returning to ROH TV, and I was a big fan of Isom's last match. A young guy I really didn't know much about, but he is pretty impressive, so I was looking forward to see him again. So as we move on, we get an inset promo as Dak Draper makes his entrance. So it's sort of he's in a box on the screen, sort of talking as he's making his entrance. He thinks similarities when he thinks of Eli Isom. They're both great athletes. They're both charismatic and good looking. Where they're different is where they find happiness. And Draper finds happiness moving up the card and getting more and more attention no matter how successful he becomes, while Eli is happy to participate no matter what happens. The good news is that they can both be happy tonight, as Draper can be happy about the win, and Isom can be happy with the participation ribbon that Draper has for him. So this is sort of Dak Draper's gimmick. If you don't know, to me, he reminds me of Matt Morgan. I don't know if that helps anybody, but a smaller version of Matt Morgan. So he's really big by ROH standards. I think he's like 6'5 or so, so he looks really huge. And he's sort of the arrogant, overconfident guy who brings participation ribbons to give to his opponents after he defeats them. So I guess that is his plan for Eli Isom. The promo was solid. This guy has a very natural delivery, very comfortable on the mic for sure. The participant ribbon thing, I can't say it's my favorite gimmick, but I understand what he's going for here. He's looking to have a signature detail, right? And something like that. And it might grow on me, who knows? I mean, at first I couldn't stand when Chad Gable introduced his towel, the Ready, Willing, and Gable towel. But eventually it grew on me, so this could as well. Commentary then tells us that Draper has petitioned to switch divisions and is now in the television title division, which is interesting because you are only in one division at a time in ROH. You're either in the pure division, the heavyweight division, or the TV title division. So up until this point, he's been in the pure division, and I would agree he's sort of misplaced there. I don't see him as a pure wrestler. I think this is a better fit for him. So I get that move, and he has officially switched. We then get Eli Isom, same sort of idea. He gets an inset promo as he's making his entrance as well. He was thrilled to hear that he was wrestling Draper, as Draper is the most arrogant person he's ever met, but maybe he has every right to be. He's big, he's fast, he's strong, but Dak Draper does not have the right to belittle people and give out participation trophies. Isom is not here to participate, he's here to humble Draper, and that is a promise. So I thought this was actually a better promo from Isom this week. I didn't think it was super strong last time, but again, he's very young and inexperienced. So I thought this was better. more comfortable in his delivery, and it was just a simple, straightforward promo, so that probably helps too. Nothing too challenging. I think I'm becoming a fan of this kid. They said last week, or the last time he wrestled, sorry, that if you take away the pandemic, he's basically been wrestling for about a year. So he's really impressive. I think he has massive potential. So I'm sort of going to keep my eye on him, I think. So we then do get the match, Eli Isom versus Dak Draper. The code of honor is adhered to, but during the handshake, Draper is sort of obviously talking trash to Isom. We don't hear it, but you can see that he's doing it. So early on, Draper's using his strength to frustrate Isom. We get a big leapfrog and a drop kick from Isom, but Draper just picks him up and throws him across the ring to showcase his power. A springboard crossbody caught by Draper, which is impressive because Isom's not a small guy. So Draper is definitely a powerhouse. But Isom escapes and eventually gets hotshotted across the top rope by Draper. We get a doctor bomb countered into a head scissor takedown by Isom. Commentary is putting over the many counters of Isom as he looks to avoid Draper's high impact offense, right? So Draper's looking to hit a couple big moves. Isom is obviously looking to avoid that, and that's kind of the story of what's going on here. We get a swinging gut wrench and a release by Draper. Draper slows the pace while he's in control, and then Eli's looking to speed things up, hits a Northern Lights suplex. Flurry by Isom. Dak escapes to the floor, but Isom hits him with a moonsault, followed by a crossbody back in the ring for a two count. We get a straight jacket German with the bridge for two by Isom, which was kind of cool. A strike exchange in the middle of the ring. Then we get the always impressive doctor bomb by Dak Draper for a two count. We get the mile high muffler, which is a stretch muffler. One of Draper's signatures, he calls it the mile high muffler. It's escaped by Isom, but a springboard back elbow from Draper ends up connecting. They punch each other as the bell rings, and it's a time limit draw as Isom demands 5 more minutes. Draper seems to agree, and it looks like they'll restart, but the lights go out. When they come back on, it's Dalton Castle in a suit with 4 men in matching back boxer shorts, masks, and white t-shirts. So he's got sort of an entourage again with him. Not the boys as it was last time, but something a little bit different, I guess. They sort of dance around the ring, and Castle sits on the barricade briefly and is handed a microphone. He says he's been watching both of these guys since they started, and Castle is impressed. Castle thinks that Isom and Draper can help him with a problem he has. Castle says that things have gotten dull around here, and people are so caught up in winning that they have forgotten that this is a TV show. Castle says that he is the only one thinking of the viewer. I appreciate that, Dalton Castle, because I've sort of felt we have hit a bit of a lull the last few weeks, so I kind of agree with him here. He goes on to say he wants to spice things up and bring some drama, and he thinks that Dak and Eli can help him. He compliments their look, says he sees something he likes and something he doesn't, and he kicks Isom low. So obviously we think he's going to sort of align with Dak Draper as he's sort of attacked Eli Isom here with a low blow. So Dak Draper thinks that he's in with Dalton, but then Dalton turns and kicks him low as well, says he's busy, and then just simply walks away. So I enjoyed the match and the aftermath with Dalton Castle, if I'm being honest. I think Isom has massive potential as a babyface. Draper's a really solid heel. I strongly agree with his shift from pure to the TV division. I had read that Dalton had re-signed with ROH, and I really like the idea of a villain that's not really interested in winning or titles, but providing the fans with entertainment. He could be a really fun, like, Machiavellian villain where he's just kind of causing trouble to cause trouble. I would enjoy that because there is such a focus on wins and losses, especially in the pure division. I think we need something a little bit different in this show. I personally enjoy Castle's quirky style and delivery on promos. I happen to absolutely agree with his take on ROH lately, and I'm guilty of sort of changing my mind on this because when the reboot started, I must admit I really liked the idea of a serious wrestling company that mostly tries for realism, but I kind of changed my mind because too much of that is simply too much, and I need something more entertainment based. So I would welcome some good old-fashioned professional wrestling style entertainment injected into these shows on some weeks. So this week already feels like we're out of the holding pattern that I've sort of said we've been in the last 3 weeks since the pay-per-view. It's just been like a holding pattern with none of the top tier talent, no real progression of stories or characters sort of thing, and it already feels like that's different this week, and I'm very happy about that. Next, it's time for a promo from the new faction, Violence Unlimited is the name they're going by, with some vowels removed when you see it in print. So Homicide speaks first and says that he's a ghost, but he's back. This group doesn't even like each other, but they like to fight and they like to win, and beware to all other factions. Chris Dickinson then speaks next and talks about the group being the past, present, and future of ROH, and LFI and the Foundation have nothing on them. Deppin speaks next, Tony Deppin that is, and says that they are the future. He won't let LFI do what they did to him after beating Kenny King again, and that's why he has aligned himself with the baddest people in ROH. Last to speak is the leader of the group, I believe, and that's Brody King, a big fan of him. He speaks and says that he has balanced out the numbers game with the underappreciated, the underrated, and they're coming for LFI's head. I thought this was a solid first promo by this group. The name isn't my favorite, as it's very similar to something going on at Impact right now with Violent by Design, and I just think it's kind of a cheesy wrestling faction name, but that's okay. This is the type of thing that's been missing for the past 3 weeks for me. This is character development, this is storyline development, right? He's sort of calling out the other main factions in the company, which is LFI and the Foundation, so I kind of like that. And it's some new people at the top of the card, which I always enjoy, so I thought this was a good promo, and I'm happy to see them sort of dealing with the star power on this in this company again, because it's been lacking for a few weeks, as I keep mentioning. So Quinn only mentioned two matches, so this was a weird little spot here, because it looks like we're getting a match, and then it looks like we're getting a heavily edited match, but then really all we get is the finish, and it's a match between the Beer City Bruiser and Joe Keys, which is one of the, from their developmental, from their dojo, I guess, who's learning. I've seen him in a match. I actually thought he looked pretty good in the last match I saw him in, but anyways, it's just him taking a DDT from the Beer City Bruiser for a win, and we see nothing else of the match. I guess the point was the aftermath. So that is, as Bruiser takes out his signature beer bottle to attack Keys after the match, a group of three of the developmental wrestlers come out to stop Bruiser, and Ken Dixon is the one who takes the bottle away from Bruiser, so it looks like he's there to help Joe Keys, but swerve, and he hits one of the other trainees and joins forces with the Bruiser instead. It was a strange sort of appearance because it was just heavily edited down to the finishing move and the aftermath of the match. So you had to deal with that. Felt very rushed, but again, I can't complain too much because we're getting a storyline introduced here. A new role for a character, right? Beer City Bruiser. I don't know much about Dixon, so I'll give it a chance. But yeah, it was a weird little insert in the middle of this show. Nothing mentioned by Quinn of this, only told we were getting two matches in the rundown, and then they sort of inserted this in the middle of them. So then we get Quinn backstage, and she's talking to Dixon and Bruiser about what has just happened. Bruiser said it wasn't his plan, but it's like in a bar when someone else picks up your tab, and Dixon has picked up the tab for him. Dixon says he's tired of playing the dojo trainee crap and has never really fit in. When pure wrestling fails, there will be violence. Bruiser says Dixon will make a name for both of them. So I thought this was fine too, a nice introduction to a new character in Dixon, and basically their motivation is they're definitely not pure wrestlers. They're here for violence, and basically the idea that pure wrestling is going to break down at some point, and what you're going to be left with is violence, and they're ready for that. So again, new character, new storyline development, so if I've been complaining about this lacking for a few weeks, and they're doing it now, I have trouble complaining. So yeah, we'll see where this goes. Am I a big Beer City Bruiser fan? No, definitely not. But it might be a nice way to get a younger talent some exposure, get him some experience with a veteran, so we'll see where it goes from here. I'm open to it, at least, we'll say. We then move on, and we get the Righteous, our enter, coming down the ramp, but Vincent is noticeably absent. We get highlights of the Vincent Taven match from 19th anniversary, which I didn't really enjoy. It was a cinematic, their version of a cinematic match, which basically was just kind of a basic hardcore match. I didn't think there was anything special about it. In a full disclosure, I'm not a Matt Taven fan, so that might have done something as well. But anyways, at that match, a new guy sort of made his debut to help out Matt Taven and the Righteous, and he has been given a name, and it's Dutch. So he is now officially part of the group, and his name is apparently Dutch. So Bateman is here, and he speaks and says that we haven't learned the lesson yet. We can't conceive of what they are, and we're not meant to. So how's that a lesson if we're not meant to learn it? Why can you criticize us for not learning a lesson that you're telling us are not supposed to learn? But anyways, Bateman, I'll give you a pass on that. The seat at the top of the mountain may be empty, but Vincent's hand is still guiding them. So it's the invisible hand, sort of like Don Callis, I guess. Vita Von Starr, the woman in the group, reads a quote from Vincent about this being a righteous rebirth. Bateman says Dutch is a hollow, inhuman monster, and Bateman was born with the devil in him, and the good work of Vincent will still be done even if he's not here. So I thought this was okay, a little bit too long, bordering on that whole we want to be cryptic and say cool things that don't really mean a whole lot. So there's a little bit of that going on here. Von Starr's contribution I didn't think was very good or necessary, if I'm being honest. I'm not a huge fan of this group. I've liked Bateman on the indies for years. This is my first time seeing him in this ROH run sort of on the main stage. So I don't know. I don't know where Vincent is or why he's not back yet. And I guess I'm supposed to care, but I kind of don't. But I guess this was okay. We then are moving into our main event, which is Violence Unlimited versus LFI. And again, they're doing the inset promos this week rather than like a sit-down sort of promo before the matches, as is their normal format. We're getting an inset promo as they're entering. LFI are not worried, and they are a weapon and a force. King has stepped in for, Kenny King that is, for Dragon Lee, and so has his father Bestia. So unfortunately for me, that's disappointing, because if you listen to this, you know Dragon Lee is probably my favorite wrestler in ROH right now, so he hasn't been around, and his father, no offense to Bestia, that's a step down in caliber and ability and everything for me, so it's a little disappointing that he's still away. Anyways, he applauds the foundation for beating them, insults Brody King's new group. They may have stumbled at the anniversary show, meaning LFI, but LFI still has the number one guy in Roosh, so who says the result is inevitable whoever he faces. This is their company, and all the dogs will be destroyed, as LFI is the past, present, and future. So basically trying to say even though they've lost the tag team championships, they still have the major title in the company in Roosh as the ROH champion, and so that they are the past, present, future of this company. I thought it was a solid package, and acknowledged their loss at the pay-per-view. I don't personally love Kenny King generally, but I thought he did a good job here. But again, I do miss Dragon Lee. He's possibly my favorite guy in this company. Off the top of my head, I think he probably is. I was just really starting to become a big fan of Dragon Lee, and he's now gone for a little bit. So I hope he comes back quickly. I don't know if he's injured or what it is, but if it is, I hope a speedy recovery and get him back on TV, because he is exciting to watch, in my opinion. So this match starts all six, surprise, surprise, brawl right from the start. Brody King and Dickinson are in the ring, and a power slam. Sorry, I guess that would be Kenny King. This is where the notes get confusing. We got Brody King and Kenny King, sorry. So Kenny King and Dickinson in the ring. Power slam by Kenny King for two, as the rest are still brawling outside. Roosh then chokes King with the cable on the floor. This is something Roosh generally does. He's a big fan of pulling out one of the cables and strangling people with it. We come back from the commercial, and the brawling outside has stopped. All the men are back on the apron as they should be, sort of in the position to take a tag should there be one. So things sort of got tidied up over the commercial break. King is tagged in, so that would be Brody King this time, and he takes out all of LFI before focusing on Roosh with a corner cannonball. We get a Falcon Arrow by Dickinson to Roosh. King and Homicide are dumped outside, leaving Dickinson all alone against all three of the LFI. Obviously, the numbers game comes into play here. We get a top rope senton by Bestia for a two count. Bestia goes up top again, but Brody King hits him with a chair. The bell rings, and LFI win by DQ. So things clearly are going to break down here. More brawling outside. The Foundation, which is Jay Lethal's sort of faction with Jonathan Gresham and Tracy Williams. And, oh my goodness, the final one who's been wrestling there forever. I can't remember his name, but anyways, it'll come to me at some point. They come out to attack both of the other groups. The groups fight as commentary yell about not feeling safe. So this is clearly just introducing these are the top three factions in this company. They're sort of going to be interacting with each other, obviously. So yeah, I don't know. The show felt like it was over here, but instead a Deppin promo plays. So I thought this was a bit strange. His group will run through every division and take all the titles is basically what he's telling us. Then we get Tracy Williams of the Foundation with a quick response saying that he will work hard to hold on to his titles, both the tag and the TV title he has right now. They mean the world to him, and then basically the show ends. So there was a lot going on this show, which is great to say because I feel like there's been basically nothing going on these shows for the last 3 weeks. The best thing, I know I've said it a bunch, was it was a holding pattern. Clearly, I don't know if they had tapings in the can before the 19th anniversary pay-per-view. That's what it felt like, that they didn't have anything done for after the pay-per-view, because I know they're doing tapings, right? It's not like these are live shows, so it feels like this is the next round of taping, so we're back to sort of main event people, a bit more star power, a bit more development of storylines and characters, which is what I'm most interested in. So it was exactly the type of improvements I was hoping for this week. Again, the past three have been holding patterns, and I was starting to get bored and honestly telling my son, like, I don't know if I can keep reviewing this because that's just not that interesting for me to watch. I'm not sure how many people listen to our podcast to hear me talk about ROH, but there's always a few downloads of these. So I'll keep doing it as long as a few people are even listening, probably. That's just kind of how I am. This week was kind of the opposite of those past 3 weeks, which is great. We got plenty of storyline and character development, which is what has been missing in the past few weeks. Even though neither of the matches on the card really had a finish, right? We got a time limit draw. Then they said that they both agreed to restart, but then we were interrupted by Dalton Castle, and then nothing happened from there. And the main event was a DQ. But despite those two kind of non-finishes, I still enjoyed this episode. It felt like things were actually happening, and quite a bit of stuff, if I'm being honest. Dalton Castle's back with a slightly new character. I like him in general, so I'm open to this character. I find him just quirky and unique. He's just kind of different than everybody else in wrestling, and I really like that about him. Brody King's group finally reappeared, and sort of we got a name and sort of what they're about. LFI were back, which is great because they are the main focus of this company, basically. Even Beer City Bruiser got some character development, and a wrestler basically got called up from developmental on this show in Ken Dixon, as he's sort of aligned himself with Bruiser Brody there. So this was still just a 1 hour show, but tons of things happened this week. It, as I say, this show reeked of effort, right? Like, this feels like they really tried. Whereas the past 3 weeks have kind of felt lazy to me, if I'm being honest with you. So I'm really glad ROH has picked up the pace again, because I do want to like this show. It's only an hour, and this was a really easy watch this week with lots of stuff going on. So I'm very happy with the way the show rebounded this week. The hour pretty much flew by for me. So again, it's only like a 50-minute show once the commercials are gone, right? So lots of stuff happened. Time went by really quickly. I quite enjoyed it. I'm very happy to say if I give this show a letter grade, I would give it a letter grade of a B+. So much improved. Very happy to see it. Hoping this continues. Hope Dragon Lee comes back because I really like him. So yeah, that's a much better show this week. Very happy to say. So that brings me to the end of this ROH review and this podcast. Again, thanks for joining me. I hope you enjoyed this. Love to hear some feedback from anybody if you would like to leave me some. And I don't really have much else to say. I'm going to wrap this up, and I hope to see you all back here on Saturday. There's a chance we're going to put out a review of Impact Wrestling's most recent pay-per-view, Rebellion. We did watch it, talk about the Omega Swan main event and a few other things that happened on that show. So we may put out something before our flagship show on Saturday. If not, we'll include a turbo review of that show on our Saturday show. But wherever you're following or subscribing or whatever, you'll know if we release something before then. So just keep an eye out for that. And if not, we will definitely see you back here on Saturday for episode 41 of FNS Wrestling Podcast. I would just like to thank you again for joining me and spending any time out of your week to listen to myself and my son talk about wrestling. We really do appreciate it. We're having fun doing this. It's just a fun hobby for us during a pandemic. We're going to keep doing it probably after as well. But thanks to everyone for checking us out, and hopefully we'll hear you, see you, whatever, on Saturday. And until then, take care.